It's Tuesday, the 3rd of May, 2016. Happy birthday to Jeff Hornacek and Tyron Lue. Basketball Monster Show, brought to you by Loot Crate and LAL71851. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to sponsor the podcast like LAL71851, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can sponsor today's podcast. Of course, a big thanks goes out to, not a big thanks, Basketball Monster. You know what Basketball Monster is. This is the Red Rock Basketball Monster podcast. If you're not checking out Basketball Monster now for all your playoff DFS needs, and when you're heading into next season, we run some pretty good stuff. I'm quite biased, obviously, but I think Basketball Monster is the best fantasy basketball site out there for seasonal and DFS information, projections, rankings, tools, all that sort of stuff. If I didn't mention it, my name is Josh Lloyd, and if you are watching this podcast live, which you can do with every episode, you can do that on YouTube. And if you are watching live on YouTube and you want to interact with the show, tweet at me at redrock_bball. You can see my Twitter handle on the screen underneath my face there at the moment. So welcome if you are watching live, and tweet at me any questions, comments, concerns, queries, criticisms that you may have as the show progresses. We've got games to talk about. Round two in full swing. Some interesting turns of events in today's game, including an odd and thrilling finish to the Spurs-Thunder game. So without further ado,
let's get to it.
Oh, Michael Bolton, you took the words right out of my mouth. The monstrous line of the night for Monday's games has to go to LaMarcus Aldridge. Even though the Spurs couldn't get over the line against the Thunder, he was massive. He played 43 minutes. He scored 41 points. That is two games in a row, and he has been absolutely on fire. He hit a three off a ridiculous Tony Parker pass. He had 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks. He went 15 of 21 from the field. He hit all 10 of his free throws. He did not turn the ball over. He was 1 of 1 from 3. He was absolutely insane, Aldridge. And he, after a really slow start to the season, probably the first 2 to 3 months, he turned into an absolute animal to end the season. And he's been tremendous throughout these playoffs. And unfortunate for the Spurs, they couldn't get a victory. And this series is very much back in the balance after just an absolute ass kicking in game one, that the Thunder recovered brilliantly to get that victory and take the split in San Antonio and head home. And historically, this series, when these two teams have played each other, it's been real tough to get a victory on the road. So that bodes extremely well for the Thunder. If you don't think the Spurs are going to come out hard in game 3 and 4 to get one back in Oklahoma City, you don't know the Spurs and you don't know the NBA. They will come out, and I would be stunned if they don't grab a game in Oklahoma City. But I'm glad that we've got this series back on track and back being competitive. Aldridge was superb. He's priced at only $8,100 on FanDuel and easily made that money back, putting up 59.1 FanDuel points. The DFS value play of the day, we head to the other game, and it's Dennis Schroeder of the Atlanta Hawks. Schroeder played 29 minutes. He played heaps, well over what Jeff Teague did, and that's two games in a row. The game 6 against Boston, I don't really classify that because it was a blowout, so the bench got extended run in general, but Schroeder here outplayed Teague, and we've seen that happen at stretches during the season, but what it doesn't do is it doesn't stick for the next game. So don't imagine that Schroeder's going to go and play 28 minutes in the next one, and Teague's going to be limited down to those 21 or 22 minutes that he played. Schroeder played 29 minutes. He put up 34.6 DFS points on FanDuel at a minimum salary of $3,500. He scored 27 points on 10 of 20 shooting. Yes, Dennis Schroeder took 20 shots. He hit 5 triples, had 3 rebounds, 6 assists. He's going to be a tremendous fantasy player when he gets a starting job. His real life value is a little bit more debatable. He'll have great games. He'll have terrible games. And he's got to weed that inconsistency and that terribleness out of his game to be really considered a point guard. And a point guard on a team who's got high aspirations, which the Hawks do. But this was good Schroeder. It was also bad Schroeder down the stretch as well. But we've seen that from him plenty of times. But tremendous numbers from a fantasy point of view. Anyway, on the flip side, the DFS dud of the night was Jeff Teague. He was priced at $6,700. He only put up 16.4 points because he played only 22 minutes. He had 8 points, 2 rebounds, 4 assists, and a 3. Not his best night. Went 2 of 9 from the field. But I imagine he goes back to close to 30 in the next game and Schroeder goes back down to that 19 to 20 minute mark. I'd be stunned if Schroeder outplayed Teague for the rest of this series. All right, we're going to take a look at the perfect DFS lineup now from Monday's games. And of course, it did include Dennis Schroeder at 34.6. Russ Westbrook was the other point guard. He was 55.4. J.R. Smith and Manu Ginobili, 24.5 for J.R. Ginobili had 20.1, and that's exactly what I was mentioning on yesterday's show. These are the shooting guards that had a real chance to put up some decent value. You had to go cheap, and you had to not expect much, and they fit the bill. LeBron at 54.9 was always going to be a tough matchup for the Hawks, and he came through with a big performance. Kent Bazemore was good. I didn't expect him to be that good going up against LeBron, but he had been pretty solid against the Cavs in the regular season. 36.4 for Bazemore. Millsap went for 47.1. That's great against a Cavs team who has really shut down opposition power forwards throughout the season. And of course, Aldridge with his 59.1. And at center, Steve Adams at 34.4. That's three or four straight games from Adams where he's put up pretty significant numbers. So maybe things are starting to come together for Adams in these playoffs. That lineup would have netted you 366.5 FanDuel points. And I reckon you would have been pretty happy with that. Before we head on to the next part of the show, I just want to show you something. Now, if you're watching on video, you can see this. If you're listening on audio, you can't see it, but go and check my Twitter handle. My Craig Sager and Greg Popovich badge arrived today, and it's pretty schmick. I'm gonna hold it up close to the camera. Just give me 1 second. You can see how cool it is. There we go. It is getting closer. Oh, that's terrible audio. It's on my shirt. There we go. What an enthralling segment that would have been to listen to. But I'm sure on the video you could see that little badge that I've got there just on my top, my Sega Strong badge, which you can buy from Patty LaPelle is the name of the website. A superb pun of a name for a company as well, which I do enjoy. And I like that little pop and Sega badge that arrived today. So make sure you're checking those guys out if you're looking to support the Craig Sager Foundation and leukemia research. Now a word from our actual sponsor, and that is Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and you get 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items and more. Each month, they have a different theme. This month's theme is power. If you are interested in epic geek and gamer items and someone who picks all the stuff for you and goes, you know what, we know what's good, we know what's unique, we know what you can't get somewhere else, let us pick it for you. It's $20 a month. It's less than $20. Head to lootcrate.com/redrock. Very easy. Help support the podcast, but make sure you're using that unique URL so that it tells the guys at Loot Crate that you're coming directly from this podcast. Hey, get 5 minutes, type it into your address bar now. If you don't buy anything, fine, that's up to you. But go and visit the site, check what they've got to offer, and you might find yourself interested or you know someone who's interested. And if you do, there's a coupon code, which is REDROCK as well, for one word, and that saves you $3 off any new subscription. So if you're looking to support the podcast, if you're looking to get your hands on something new and exciting, head to lootcrate.com/REDROCK and check out all the offers they have over there today. All right, let's get into these games that we had on Monday and look at them a little bit more closely. As I mentioned, Schroeder got that extra run with Teague struggling and Schroeder being red hot, but I don't imagine that continues too much. The thing that I was waiting to see is what happened in guarding LeBron and would that allow Thabo Sefolosha to get some extra run? Well, it didn't. Thabo played only 11 minutes and had 2 points, while Kent Bazemore played 36 and he had 16 and 12. He had 4 assists, 2 steals and 3 threes. And I think that Bazemore, he wasn't horrible. And Thabo has really struggled. I think that Bazemore continues to get pretty big minutes throughout the rest of these playoffs and remains a pretty solid DFS target. Millsap was fantastic, 17 and 13 with 2 steals and 4 blocks. The shooting was not 6 of 19 and 5 of 8 from the line. Not his best shooting night, and that will happen against the Cavs. They do defend power forwards pretty well. I wouldn't imagine Millsap goes that well defensively again. But Al Horford chimed in doing the same sort of thing. He had 2 steals and 3 blocks and 10 and 6. But both of those guys really struggled with their shot. 32% from the field for Millsap and 31 for Al Horford. And that is something that the Cavs will do, and they will restrict what big men can do. So bear that in mind for future DFS lineups. Kyle Korver was terrible. He took 1 shot for the entire game. He missed it. He had 3 points, 5 rebounds, nothing else. He will have to get better. He was fantastic in the Boston series. He wasn't going to be that good throughout the rest of the playoffs because he just hadn't been that good throughout the regular season. But this is a big drop-off. The Hawks are also intimating or basically flat out saying that they were going to play Chris Humphries more. He played 0 minutes, so zero is not more than zero, so he didn't play at all. We still saw Mike Scott getting in there. We saw Mike Muscala playing 6 minutes. Humphries might come out in game two, but it's not going to be enough to really do any sort of influencing of values in a DFS point of view. Onto the Cavs, LeBron tremendous, 25-7-9, 5 steals, a block and 2 threes, that's fantastic. Irving had 21-8 with 2 blocks and 3 threes, and Kevin Love went 17-11 with a steal, a block and 3 threes. And the only thing worse than Millsap and Horford was Love's shooting. He went 4 of 17 for a conversion of 24%. I like what Tristan Thompson's doing, and he has been a really underrated DFS player over the last couple of games. Started the playoffs off poor, but his minutes have really risen. He played 40 here. He went 8-14 with 2 blocks. Tim Mozgov is basically excised from the rotation. He played 7 seconds only. He has been absolutely abysmal this season. Interesting to see what happens with him in free agency in the offseason. But he is not. He played less minutes than Dante Jones. And there are going to be people who are listening to this podcast who do not realize that Dante Jones is still in the NBA. Mozgov played less minutes than him in this game. He's really, really bad. Iman Shumpert's only getting 15 minutes. He is not going to be a big factor in these playoffs. He's going to split time but with Dellavedova in the backcourt, and J.R. Smith's going to get the bulk of the minutes there. He played 38 and went 12-5 with 3 assists and 4 triples. And Dally wasn't great. He had 1 point on 0 of 2 shooting. He had 4 assists in his 13 minutes, but these guys are not DFS targets. Onto the Thunder and the Spurs. A crazy end to the game with Dion Waiters elbowing Manu Ginobili, Ginobili flopping, people going, oh, but Ginobili's foot was over the line. From what I understand, his foot was on the line, and that doesn't mean that it's a violation. It has to be over the line. I know it's a technicality, but it was on the line and not over the line. So people calling for, oh, you know, his foot was over the line. It should have been a violation or a tech or whatever it was. Not the case. But the fact that Waiters threw an elbow into his neck, and yes, Ginobili exaggerated, as he always does, but it still should have been a foul against the Thunder. And then we have that final play of the game when Steven Adams has that crazy closeout and then falls into the crowd, and the people in the crowd hold him back. They're holding his arms. I was convinced watching it that Adams was going to smack someone Ron Artest style. He turned around, and if you don't look, Ron Artest is pretty crazy. He's a tough guy, he's a fighter, but Steven Adams is just an absolute animal. And look, he probably doesn't have the same aggression control issues as what Artest does. But if he gets pissed, I definitely don't want to be on the wrong side of him, because we hear people in the NBA being, you know, tough or studio gangsters or fake tough guys. I don't think Steven Adams is a fake tough guy. He's a legit tough guy. And if you held him back and the Thunder lost, he would have cracked some heads open. I'm pretty much convinced, unless, you know, self-restraint got to him. But even after the whistle blew, everyone was, after, you know, the buzzer rang, everyone was celebrating. He just turned around and death stared those people in the seats. And if you know what, if you're sitting courtside, A, you're probably not listening to this podcast, but get your bloody hands off the players. What are you doing holding them back? You deserve to be smacked. You deserve to be cracked right in the skull for doing that. That is beyond ridiculous. Do not touch the players. Do not grab the players. Do not restrict the players. If a player punches you right in the face, you deserve it. Don't do it if you're listening. Again, if you're sitting in the front row, you're probably not listening to this podcast, but get your bloody hands off him. Anyway, Durant was good, even with Kawhi on him. He went 11 of 19. That's a tremendous effort. 28-7-4, and Westbrook had 29-7-10. So big games from the big stars there. Adams was great. 37 minutes for 12-17 with a steal and a block, and that's really limiting what Kanter can do. He played just 19 minutes. He was still productive and actually had 3 blocks. Do not bank on that. But 12-8 with 3 blocks in 19 minutes. Kanter's minutes have been well up in the last couple of games, and I think they're going to run with him. Well, it looks like they're going to run with him for majority of the minutes here at center and limit what Kanter can do. And that was sort of what was shaping to be the case. The matchup with Kanter and the Spurs is not ideal, and Adams provides more of that strength down low, and that's the way that it's worked out. Ibaka, 12-5, 2 threes, 2 blocks. Not a bad night, not a great one. And Andre Robertson was great defensively and did nothing box score wise. He did have 3 steals, but DFS wise, we don't really care about what he did there. Also, Campaign played 7 minutes, and Randy Foy didn't play at all. This only took 3 months for Billy Donovan to realize that. How does every single person in the NBA, watching the NBA, talking about the NBA, realize it's a dick move? It is just a ridiculous move to put Foye in the lineup over Payne. The only explanation I can have is Billy Donovan.
He's an idiot. Don't listen to this. He's an idiot. All right, that's what we got to say about that. He's an idiot.
Thanks, Kevin. I tend to agree. You probably shouldn't say that about your coach, but I do tend to agree with you that it was idiotic to have played Foyi over Payne for all this time, only now for a light bulb to go off. You know, bing. Oh, you know what? Maybe Payne's better. Like, no shit. Anybody could have seen that Foyi is useless and that Payne was showing tremendous promise, playing better as well. And you know, let him play. Let him work with this rotation. Let him get up to speed. And now you're playing. It just... ridiculous. Daniel Waiters was poor. He had 3 points in 25 minutes. He will have a game in this series. He will have a big game. It's going to come in game 3 and 4 if it's happening, but he will have a game better than this. Onto the Spurs. Ginobili was great in his 22 minutes, 11-3 with 2 steals and a block. Kawhi, not his best night, 14-7 with 3 assists, 2 steals and 2 blocks. Defensively still there, but Robertson really bothered him offensively. He was 7 of 18 from the field, and Danny Green, not a good shooting night, 3 of 11, but really good otherwise. He hit 3 threes, he played 36 minutes, he had 4 steals, just doing the defensive things that Danny Green does, and he's looking a lot better in these last couple of games as opposed to what he looked like throughout the regular season. Tone Parker played just the 27 minutes, 7 points with 6 assists, and Timmy Duncan went 2 and 9 in his 28 minutes. Not much else to really go through, I think, with the Spurs. Pretty good game, exciting finish, craziness happening. The Spurs are going to be dead set out for blood in game 3 to try and get that game back, and I wouldn't put it past them to do that. All right, that is the games we saw on Monday. Going to take a quick break for a word from one of our sponsors, and then we're going to look back, well not look back, we're going to look forward to the DFS action on Tuesday. All right, now we've got 2 games on Tuesday, we've got 1 game on Wednesday. As of this stage, now FanDuel surprised me during the day and they included a 2-day contest, a Monday-Tuesday contest, which when I recorded yesterday's podcast, wasn't there. As of this stage, all they have is Tuesday contest, but they could have a Tuesday-Wednesday contest or maybe they have a Wednesday-Thursday contest. We don't know at this point. So I'm just going to be covering the Tuesday games, the two of those, because I just don't know what these sites are doing. They haven't put anything up yet to say whether they're having a 2-day contest, but if they do, you know you can go straight to basketballmonster.com and have a look at our projections and build your lineup that way. Let's look at the Miami and Toronto. It's game 1 of round 2. The Raptors are 4.5-point favorites here. The total is 191. Let's look at the point guards. And you know what? I don't love anything here. Kyle Lowry at 7,800 has not been good. The elbow is really bothering him. And heading up against a Heat defense is not a great spot for Lowry. Not the guy I want to look for. Obviously, Dame Lillard's going to be more of a heavy target in terms of point guards for spending money. Dragic at 6,500 was great in Game 7. He put up 38 points, and at 6,500, I don't hate using Dragic. I think that he can get you those 30 points. Not the best option out there. I think a Lillard-Livingston pairing is probably going to be the best point guard option, but Dragic is not terrible. Corey Joseph, who shows flashes, he plays minutes, but it doesn't translate into big points. He's at 3,700. He averaged 19 points across his last 3 games, had 18 in game 7, just really struggles to crack that 20-point barrier. But you know what? 20 points at 3,700 is actually okay. And in a tournament, maybe he goes for 25. It's probably a bit unlikely, but if he gets 25 at 3,700, that's really helping your lineup build out nicely. At shooting guard, DeMar DeRozan, he'll be thankful that he doesn't have Paul George on him. Dwayne Wade, not the same defender, but they can chuck Justice Winslow on him. They can chuck Joshie Richardson onto him, which might be a concern. They're obviously not the defenders that what Paul George is. At 7,400, the drop that DeRozan's taken makes me really interested to get back on here. He had 48 points in Game 7. In the last 3 times he's played Miami, he's averaged 51 points. I think that DeRozan... I think you have to really reassess and go, you know what, the DeRozan we saw against Indiana will not be the same DeRozan we see against Miami. Yes, Miami's quite good defensively, but Paul George isn't on him. And that's a big drop-off. Josh Richardson's great, Justice Winslow's great, but they're not Paul George. So I think that you can get 35 points out of DeRozan pretty comfortably, and 40 points should be the aim here. Now, Wade at 7,500. Wade's got a pretty nice matchup. Now, he didn't have to do much in Game 7 against the Hornets. He was playing really well before that. His last 5 is averaging 31.5, including a really down performance in that Game 7. And at 7,500, you could easily spend up. Yesterday, you couldn't spend up at shooting guard. On Tuesday, DeRozan and Wade, a fine combination to put at shooting guard. Throw CJ McCollum and Klay Thompson in. Shooting guard is a great spot to spend your money. Richardson... Probably not. But Normie Powell at 3,600, I think, is one of the best GPP flyers out there. Put up 22 points in Game 7 for the Raptors. He's shown himself to be a bit of a wild card, and he's shown himself to be someone they have to play 20 minutes of. It can't be Terrence Ross. It has to be Powell. He has to get these minutes. He has to play 20-plus, and he'll convert it into points in some of these games. So I do like him as a $3,600 flyer. Terrence Ross, Gerald Green, who had a really good Game 7, I don't trust him to do it again. Small forwards, Damari Carroll at 4,400, has yet to really do anything in these playoffs, but the minutes are up there. It is going to come at some point. It is a horrible matchup. Small forwards really do struggle against the Heat, as do power forwards, and he's been playing a little bit of the four. But at 4,400, if you've got multiple tournament lineups, he is going to hit one of these games. It is going to come together because the minutes are there, and he's looking more comfortable. Joey Johnson at 47. I don't love him at 4,700. He's really struggling to get that sort of number, so he's not for me. Justice Winslow at 35, he barely cracks 15 points on most nights. A power forward, it's Luol Deng. He's at 6,600. I think the matchup is okay against Patrick Patterson. He's been solid, Deng, averaging 28 across the last five, but really nothing overly spectacular. At 6,600, I think you can do better, and you want to be including a guy like Draymond Green into your lineup. Pat, he had 20 points in Game 7. That's the best that he's had over these playoffs. At 3,600, he's always worth a consideration, but the Heat do defend power forwards pretty well, so I'm not massively in love with him. Joshie McRoberts at 3,500 had a nice 18-pointer in Game 7, but I don't imagine he plays 20 minutes, so he won't be really worth looking at. Interesting, the Chris Bosh situation in Miami, where there seems to be a lot of tension between the team. He's saying he wants to play. The Heat won't let him play. Very intriguing and something definitely to keep our eye on. Hassan Whiteside at 8,000. Yep, he's fine. But if you spent up at shooting guard and power forward, which I think you should do, not sure I really want to use Hassan here and get. I don't think he's going to get you that guaranteed 40 points. Valanciunas at 6,200. Look, he's good. He just doesn't play enough minutes, and that is the concern. He's averaging 27 points across the last five, 28 across his last three, dropped to 31 in Game 7. He could have a big performance, but I'm not sure it's really the way to go. Like, a Mason Plumlee might be a better option, but Valanciunas, if I'm trying to save some cash, it's definitely him over Whiteside. The last game, or the second game of the night, is the Portland Trailblazers and the Golden State Warriors. We're talking Game 2 for the Warriors. They're favored by 10. They're favored by 10 without the MVP. That's how good they are. The total here is 214. Livingston is up to 4,600. That is not crazy for me. He put up 25 again in Game 1. He's going to be a 23 to 27 point guy, and at 4,600, absolute value. And Lillard at 8,400, he's going to be 40 plus. He's averaging 42 across the last three, had 45 in Game 1. He's going to have to do that, and without Steph on there, he's a massive chance. I think that you have to lock Lillard into pretty much all lineups. Klay Thompson was significant in Game 2. He put up just a casual 53 points. He's at 8,000, so another one of those high-priced shooting guards that you can consider. I think that he and DeRozan are probably the two guys that you want to get out there, but you could get any combination of DeRozan, McCollum, Thompson, and Wade, and really work it to your advantage, because that's probably the elite guys on Tuesday night. McCollum at 7,000 struggled. He really struggled with his shot against Thompson at 24 points. Not a great return, but at 7,000, you can save $1,000 off Clay. Now, his upside is nowhere near Clay's, but he can still get to 40 points. And at 7,000, I think the McCollum is not a bad guy. And I think a lot of people will pivot away from him after Game 1. So he might be a contrarian tournament guy to take a look at. Alan Crabb's been really solid. He's at 3,900. He's averaging 24 points across the last three. I don't see it continuing, but he's not a horrible guy in a tournament to look at. Gerald Henderson, I'm not in love with at all. The small forward position, Harry Barnes had a really nice Game 1. He put up 25 in that one. He's at 4,400. He's really got no trust for cash, but he's always an okay tournament play, but not a massively great one because his upside's not high. Iguodala at 4,400. I think that salary is probably ruling him out of consideration in a lot of spots for me, while Mo Harkless at 5,100 has really been down and was down in Game 1 against the Warriors, not wanting to spend 51. I'd much rather take Barnes over Harkless, save myself that $700, and get myself Clay, or get myself Draymond, or get myself DeMar DeRozan. Al-Farouq Aminu at 5,600, the highest price of the small forwards in this game. He's got the ability to go big, yes, but he won't. He won't do it that often. He put up 22 in Game 1. He needs his threes to really start falling, and that's sort of a hit-and-miss proposition. At 5,600, he's not the most solid of investments, but his upside is probably the highest out of that group of guys. at power forward. It's Draymond. He's at 9,300. He had 61 in game one. He is going to rule this team. He's averaging 55 points in the last three times he played the Blazers. Almost lock him in for 50 at this point. Love Draymond here. Eddie Davis had a big game at 3,600. He put up 24 points in game one. That's his biggest performance of the playoffs. Not really expecting him to do that again, but he's always an opportunity to get 20 minutes and grab six or seven rebounds, block two or three shots. He has that ability. So if you're looking to save salary in a tournament, Davis is a guy I'd prefer over, say, Mo Spates or a James Michael McAdoo or guys like that, or heaven forbid, a Noah Vonleh. At center, Andy Bogut at 4,500 was tremendous in game one, and I think he will still remain tremendous. I love using Bogut at 4,500. I'd save up there and go at the positions that I mentioned before. You know, Lillard, a big shooting guard, and Draymond is really the way to go and save at some of those other spots. Maybe a Harry Barnes and a Bogut at small forward. Plumlee has been really good, but at 6,300, he feels a little bit expensive. I'd probably rather save that $2,000 and get Bogut in there and get 25 points instead of a 30-point performance, which Plumlee might offer. Azeeley did not play at all in game one. I don't imagine that Varejao continues to play. I think Azeeley will get those 7 minutes or so, but it's not really impacting anything that we do from a fantasy point of view. All right, I'm not doing the DFS picks of the day again because, as I said, with two games, there's not really much point. I'll just talk through it all and go from there. I think you can get enough of a gist of what's happening for me to mention all this. And plus, you can go check this all out at Basketball Monster, see our projections, see the minutes, see the projected points totals, pass totals versus opponent averages, all that sort of stuff over on Basketball Monster. We are done for today's show, guys. Don't forget to keep subscribing to this podcast and listening. There's going to be announcements about future Dynasty Leagues coming in the next few weeks, plus all the DFS action through the second round of the playoffs. And then we head into season review mode for all the teams, which will be accompanied by some very chunky articles. I'm about 6,000 words per team that I've written so far for the teams that I've done. So check out those, which will be up on Basketball Monster. Then we go into draft stuff, free agency, summer league, drafts, draft prep, draft previews, draft mock drafts, all that sort of stuff happening throughout the offseason. So stick with this podcast, subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, give the show a thumbs up. Thanks to the people who give those thumbs down. Really appreciate those ones. Just joking. If you don't like the show, hey, I don't care. Give me a thumbs down. That's fine. But if you do like it, give me a thumbs up. Subscribe on iTunes, leave a review, share the show, do whatever you can. It's really, really fantastic. Thank you to everyone who listens to this show and has made it grow to the extent that it has. I really do appreciate it. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.